Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Every now and then, the story of an enormously successful tech company being worth hundreds of millions of dollars or even $1 billion makes the news. These stories are a hallmark of our new technology buoyed economy. So magical and highly valued are such companies that insiders have a name for them: unicorns. Only about 100 such companies exist worldwide, and a majority of them are in the U.S. But as with any such too-good-to-be-true financial phenomenon, is the warning of what happened last time and what is likely to happen in the future. What goes up must come down, or perhaps what inflates into a bubble must eventually burst. That's the case my guest Doug Henwood makes in his new article for The Nation, entitled Age of the Unicorn: How the Fed Tried to Fix the Recession and Created the Tech Bubble. Doug Henwood is a political economist, author of After the New Economy, editor of Left Business Observer. Welcome to Uprising, Doug. Thanks for joining us. Well, just to get a sense of what companies are considered unicorns, you cite the famous ones that were unicorns before they were famous: Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Groupon, etc. What is the financial definition of a unicorn?
It's a company that's worth $1 billion. The way that's figured is if, an investor puts $100 million into a company and gets a 10% stake in it, that's figured to be $1 billion. We don't really know that they could actually sell the other 90% for $900 million, but that's the rule of thumb that people use. It's just a way of being gee whiz when you have a unicorn.
So are these so-called unicorns artificially inflating the economy? And what does the Federal Reserve have to do with it?
Well, the Federal Reserve, starting after the financial crisis, when interest rates got down to 0% and the economy was not taking off, decided to do something called quantitative easing, which meant basically they bought gobs of bonds, treasury bonds and mortgage bonds, in a hope to get some liquidity into the economy and stimulate things. Most people who study this think that it helped a little bit, but not very much. Maybe added a couple of percentage points to economic growth over the last few years, maybe took a fraction of a percent off the unemployment rate. So, but when fiscal crisis is, if fiscal problems when fiscal policy has been very tight, this was the only stimulative game in town. But one thing it did was certainly to stimulate the financial markets. The Fed pumped over $4 trillion of liquidity into the markets, and that led to a very buoyant stock market, at least the last couple of months, to buoyant real estate markets in cities where finance is big, like on the coast, New York, and in California, but also did also stimulate investment by venture capitalists in tech startups. And this, unlike the boom in the late 90s, doesn't involve the public so much. In the late 90s, the public bought all these crazy dot-com stocks, and when everything went bust, millions of people lost lots of money, so their retirement accounts wiped out, or their savings really, really reduced. This time, it's mostly institutional investors who put money into venture capital funds. So when things go bust, the immediate circle of people that's going to be hurt will be relatively small, although this money has really inflated real estate markets in New York and especially San Francisco. That's, I think, the real world effect of a lot of this has been to do that, to price people out of those areas.
I want to quote from your article, Doug, about how artificial these tech companies' products are and their promise of profits are. You wrote, quote, on June 1st, it was revealed that Snapchat, a company that made its name on Evanescence, raised over $500 million, bringing its valuation to $16 billion. As of now, it has almost no revenue and nothing but red ink where the profits should be, but its long-term plan seems to amount to hopes to sell advertising someday. That's crazy.
Yes, well, there's a lot of that, and it reminds me so much of the late 90s dot-com bubble. When I interviewed a guy who ran a mutual fund that invested in dot-com stocks, he said, it's good not to have earnings. And I said, okay, sure. And of course, that all went bust. And now we're hearing some similar stories that these companies will, you know, make tons of money in the future, but they're not yet. Even Uber, which is a big deal, is not making money, or is barely making any money. It's hard to tell because it's a privately held company. But I quote somebody in the article who said that Uber is going to have to grow by some phenomenal percentage rate for years and years and years to justify the valuations being accorded to it now. And that's, relatively speaking, in this world, a solid company. Now, Facebook is making money. Facebook is, but it's very well established. But most of these other guys aren't making any money and really don't have a prayer of making money. I don't quite understand how they hope to make money. Spotify, also well established, a unicorn, but not likely to make any money that anyone can see in the near future.
Doug, wasn't that Amazon's profit model as well, that for years Amazon didn't make any money because they were essentially underselling everybody and promising the moon? But of course, now Amazon is Amazon.
Well, Amazon is still a giant, but it's not making lots of money. It's barely profitable. Conventional measures. The whole idea is to build market share and drive everyone else out of business, and then I guess they'll be sitting pretty. But they haven't gotten there yet. You know, it's 15, more than 15 years into the history of Amazon. They're still barely making any money. It's a weird model of capitalism. In a system where everything is supposed to be organized around making profit, sometimes in bubble moments that requirement is suspended, and people believe in the future and to talk all these marvelous, almost utopian tales. But then it all comes crashing back down.
And I want to
talk someday soon, I'm sure.
I want to talk about that crash, but who is pouring money into these tech companies? Because they do need startup money. And I'm thinking of all the worthy and important projects that could actually benefit humanity, that actually make things that help people or enable people to be helped, that are constantly starving for funds, KPFK included. And
yes.
There are these rich people clearly with billions to throw around. They're investing in these tech companies that may crash and burn and someday crash the economy. But they'll still have a few million left or several million left to live out their lives, even if they lose their few billion. And the rest of us, may have pensions that are invested in these artificial companies?
Yeah, well, the venture capitalists are the ones who put most of the money into these things. Venture capitalists, most of the industry is clustered around Sand Hill Road in Palo Alto. It's a small group of people who know each other, basically, and, you know, eat at the same places and go to the same parties, and they raise their money from institutional investors like pension funds, some rich individuals, but mostly it's big institutional investors like pension funds, and then they look for major opportunities. Now, the way the venture capital industry works is that, you know, you assume that maybe 9 out of 10 of your investments are going to go bad, but number 10 will hit it big, and that's why you make all your money. But every now and then they get really, really carried away with the crazy stuff. And, you know, that happened a little over 15 years ago, and it's happening again now. And you can just look back, you can look at it and say, what are these people thinking? You know, a mattress company, maker of razor blades. I mean, these are the kinds of things there that supposedly magical, that are going to transform the world, that it's really hard to believe the story. You know, when this happened in the late 90s, you know, they were building the commercial internet. So, you know, it's some of that stuff, although it appeared crazy, at least there was a real-world consequence, a positive real-world consequence to some of it. Now I just can't see it at all, you know. And something like Uber does damage to cab drivers. Something like Airbnb is raising rents in expensive cities like Los Angeles and San Francisco and New York. The positive benefit of a lot of this stuff is really hard to see this time around. But so I guess the venture capitalists are hoping that one of them is going to hit it big. But I think a lot of them are going to lose a lot of money.
And so what happens when they lose a lot of money? And how likely is it that this is a tech bubble that will burst? Because clearly these mainstream economists aren't really talking about it. They don't really see it. But then they usually don't see the bubbles before they burst.
Yeah, a lot of economists believe financial markets are rational, so there can't possibly be bubbles, which is...
Though history completely tells us otherwise.
Yes. But, you know, history is not for the textbooks. It's going to burst eventually somehow. The Federal Reserve is planning on raising interest rates, if not in a couple of weeks, then probably later this year. The troubles we saw in the Chinese stock market and the Chinese economy as it's slowing down suggest that maybe we're on somewhere nearer the bursting of that bubble than we were before. Speculative markets hate it when the central bank starts tightening and raising interest rates. And the speculative markets love it when the central bank is being really loose and pumping money into the system. And it had been pumping money like crazy into the system, which is what fed this, what inflated this bubble. And now as the Fed starts trying to withdraw some of this liquidity, I think we'll see that bubble begin bursting probably later this year.
Later this year, that's fast.
Well, it's been going for a couple of years. I mean, it's been, you know, the number of, I can't remember these numbers exactly, but like something, there were 8 unicorns in the early 2000s, and now we've got, you know, over 100 of them, depending upon who's doing the counting.
Right.
Most of them born during the last 2 years.
And for anybody just tuning in, by unicorn, we're talking about a startup, a tech company worth at least $1 billion. Now on Friday, the Labor Department released its monthly jobs report. It found that the economy added 173,000 jobs and that the unemployment level fell to a low 5.1%. The New York Times said that the report, quote, provided evidence for both camps to make their cases. This is both camps in the debate over whether the Fed should raise interest rates. What do you think based on this jobs report?
Well, part of the problem is that those numbers come from separate surveys. The Bureau of Labor Statistics does a survey of households that comes up with the unemployment rate, asks people, are you working, not working, what kind of work do you do? But they also survey employers. So they survey about 300,000 employers to come up with that number. That 173,000 number comes from the survey of employers. It was weaker than it's been in the previous 6 months or so, considerably weaker than it was in the 6 months before that, was below what most people who follow these things were expecting. So that could be taken as a sign that the economy is slowing down. It could also just be an anomalous month. We won't really know till next month. The household survey shows, you know, a decline in unemployment. Decline in the number of unemployed, decline in the unemployment rate, which makes people who are nervous about inflation, which is crazy right now, but there are people on Wall Street who are nervous about inflation, that makes them very nervous. They don't like to see the unemployment rate get too low, so they're pressing the Fed to tighten. The Fed has been ambiguous about what it's planning to do in its next policy meeting in a week or two. So we shall see, but I don't think they'd be very aggressive in tightening, but the markets have gotten so addicted to easy money for years now that breaking of that habit could be pretty disruptive, as they like to say in Silicon Valley.
Finally, in the last few seconds, Doug, what can we do? Those of us who don't have money invested in these massive tech companies called unicorns, will we be hurt when this bubble bursts?
Well, I don't think it will hurt too many people who are not directly involved in this game.
So it's different from the last tech bubble.
Yeah, it's very
saying.
Different from the last time when people had lots of money invested. People had their retirement money invested. You know, if you have money in a pension, most people don't have pensions anymore. But you know, if you're lucky enough to have a pension, you may take a very, very slight hit. But I don't think it's going to affect too many people in the real world, unless you're like driving a car for Uber. And there could be a positive effect in that, as I was saying earlier, the pressures on housing costs in cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York could ease up some because it's this bubble has been driving the rents higher. And,
so the ripple effect of an inflating bubble might tamp down.
Well, yeah.
Well,
unless people panic, and then if people panic, then who knows what will happen. But if people don't panic, it shouldn't be matter
well,
too much to regular people.
We'll post a link to your article from our website later today. Doug, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Doug Henwood is a political economist, author of After the New Economy, the editor of Left Business Observer.